staff for forms so we can hear the podcast here to make sure that we hear from everyone who would like to make a presentation tonight. The speakers will be held to the city's 3-minute rule, so please be aware of that, and we'll be giving you a 30-second warning when the 3 minutes is about to expire. The first speaker that's made a request is Steve Banaschek, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Mr.
Yes.
Banaschek?
How you doing? So my name is Steve Banaschek. I'm a 30-year resident of Alexandria. Thank you for giving me a couple minutes to talk. I want to talk just about, actually I want to inquire about transportation and electrification in the city. I'm sure most of you know that Alexandria has 98 school buses, 86 dash buses, and over 900 vehicles of different types, not including the fire department. They're part of the vehicle fleet here. So my questions for the city are, and for you, what plans, if any, are there to electrify Alexandria's transportation vehicles and buses? Question two, what plans, if any, to build out and encourage charging infrastructure for EVs for the general public? And then three, how could I work with this commission, or how can anybody work with the commission to start setting goals and get this into policy and start making this happen? Sort of been working with Dash Bus a little bit. They're in kind of the conceptual, early conceptual phase of working towards getting electric buses. But I've looked through the Alexandria Transportation Development Plan, which covers 5 years, no mention of electrification or charging infrastructure. And I've searched in quite a variety of documents and really couldn't found little, if anything, of any mention, much less plans or goals for electrification. So I'm not sure what you could tell me tonight, but I wanted to get it on record to start the process of getting this done.
Well, thank you. I can speak to the DASH issue. That was actually just covered this evening. The DASH is in the process of formulating a policy of moving towards the electric technology for the buses. It is not in a very robust state at this point. However, as technology develops, and we know that's increasing, I'll say, exponentially over time, we hope to be able to take advantage of the opportunities and the benefits, not only from the operating costs, but particularly the maintenance and, as an extension, the emissions, obviously, is a big concern that the city would have, and the dashboard is very aware of that as well. But that is something that is under consideration by the board currently. Any of the city staff may have any other feedback?
I guess, in terms of charging stations, a number of our smart area plans, including that have been recently adopted, like Beauregard Smart Area Plan, the Eisenhower West Smart Plan, and that transportation chapter, we do have sections in there that policy language that talks about charging stations. So as future development happens in those areas, we encourage developers to include charging stations, either within their garages or, you know, near their developments. But there's nothing in there that actually says anything about the city constructing those charging stations or paying for them, so it's more encouraged by as part of the development.
So it's not any form of city plans to do anything or even encourage it in some of the plans, but there is some effort in individual plans to.
And the small area plans, which are actually part of the city's master plan. So they're adopted as part of the master plan. So there is a policy that does talk to charging stations.
Nothing really centralized or
Not that I'm aware.
I wanted to also add that the environmental action plan is being updated right now. Yeah, and so that's like, I think that's a really important place to put that feedback in. That's coordinated with other plans. I believe the transportation master plan is scheduled to be updated in 2019. Maybe staff can double check that.
Yeah, there's two chapters.
Yeah. So there's a there tends to be an ongoing work program for updating these different comprehensive plan elements, and so we're looking at 2019 for the update to pieces of that. So that would be ideally what we'd have at that point is an updated environmental action plan that we could then roll into specific advice, perhaps recommendations that come out of that can roll into the transportation elements so that we could get more consistency there. So those are opportunities.
Thank you.
Actually, I did have a comment as well. I'm on a policy advisory group for some land use planning in the landmark Van Dorn area,
and this is just something that's coming together. Mr. Cindion is also part of this as well. I mean, that's another place where that feedback would be useful, I think. Obviously, I can speak to that while I'm there, but if other people come in and address that as a concern, then that's another place to insert the same policy language we've seen adopted in another plan. So we're in the beginning of the process.
Now for the landmark.
Landmark Van Dorn Policy Advisory Group. The next meeting is on Monday, next Monday, October the 23rd, from 7 to 9 at 200 Cameron Station Boulevard.
That's on the city website?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next speaker will be Jim Durham.
Thank you. I'm going to just two sheets. I'll take one from the top, one from the bottom. Good evening, my name is Jim Durham, President of Fort Wayne Parkway in Alexandria. I have three points to make tonight. First is, thank you very much for adding public comment period to the agenda. It's very much appreciated. Second, I'm a member of the Central Alexandria Traffic Study Task Force, and I have some observations to share with you, recommendations, which I've sent by letter, so I won't repeat that. But basically, for everybody's benefit, you may not have seen that letter. The traffic study has significant implications for the city's transportation planning. The study's in progress, and I believe the commission should have an opportunity to both shape the study and the recommendations coming out of that. My first letter today recommended that the commission review the study, at least as far as the regional transportation implications. While the study's in progress, you can have an opportunity to make an impact on that. I'd be happy to answer any questions there. My third item is a request on behalf of the Alexandria Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee that the commission recommend speed management as a fundamental tenet in Alexandria's Vision Zero plan and include 25 mile per hour maximum speed limits citywide. The sketch on the bottom of the first page illustrates why. First is the dramatic change in the risk to a person being struck by a vehicle, the amount of damage. So chance of 1 out of 10 surviving if you're hit at 40 miles an hour versus 9 out of 10 surviving if you're hit at 20 miles an hour. And to me, more importantly, is the second half of this graphic, which shows the field of vision and articulates that the risk of a crash goes down as the speed goes down, both because of field of view and initial time to react. You know, there's a speed-related problem in the United States. It's about equal to drunk driving. In Alexandria, and much more than distracted driving, by the way, and in Alexandria, we know that 17 of the top 20 crash locations in the city are located on our 35 mile an hour roads, which the second page handout I gave you shows you where those are, almost all the West End, except for a little bit of the Parkway and one. In August, the National Transportation Safety Board published a landmark study which recognized this deadly problem and called for automatic action to reduce speed-related deaths. Three strategies are proven to be particularly effective at addressing speed-related, or managing safe speeds. They're shown here in the sketch. Safe street design, automated speed enforcement, and safe speed limits. Of those, feedback...
30 seconds.
What's that?
30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Of those, street design is the most important, and we recommend it's so important that the city ought to pursue temporary measures where the funding may not be in place to do a full-up construction street redesign. In summary, BPAC requests that the Transportation Commission adopt speed management as a fundamental tenet in its Alexandria Vision Zero plan. We ask that the plan include near-term steps to implement all three of the proven strategies, including safe street design with temporary changes and 25 mile an hour speed limits and neighborhood speed zones. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak again. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Durham. The next speaker will be Mr. Doyle.
When that gentleman got up, I thought for a moment we had two Mr. Doyle. And he just jumped up. I don't have a formal presentation, but I do have some cards. My name is Mike Doyle. I live on Princess Street in town. And if I were to tell you that MS-13 has penetrated this town to the point where 90 people were mugged and 4 people were killed. And that was in the newspapers, and that was true. We'd all be very upset. Well, we do have 90 people getting mugged. They're by 2,000 plus pounds of steel. There were 90 crashes last year, pedestrians getting crashed into by cars. 4 people were killed last year by crashes. This year, I don't know exactly what the statistics are, but we've already had, unfortunately, 2 people killed by cars crashing into them. And just to put it in context, in previous years, it was 70 people crashes into cars. I'm a crash survivor. I won't go into the details, but I was right away in a crosswalk. Somebody didn't bother to look, took me out. And I'm here today because we started a group called Alexandria Families for Safe Streets. And we are a coalition of citizens, a broad-based coalition of citizens, trying to urge the city to implement Vision Zero now. Vision Zero was voted on by the council in January, I believe, of this year, and that's very laudable. And there are a lot of things going on in transportation department and other agencies in the city we're aware of that they're studying it. And frankly, it's implemented in London and New York and San Francisco, so there's a lot of good examples of what works and what doesn't. And we are going to be, I would imagine, strongly supportive of this effort. We have 250 people signed our petition so far. When I made a petition or an appeal to the city council back in February, I sort of limped up. I was still in neurological rehab to do something for funding. Everyone was very sympathetic. I'm not looking for sympathy, I'm looking for action. Unfortunately, it was sort of late in the budget process, and the budget was cut for complete streets by almost two-thirds, effectively, almost two-thirds. What we're about now is, this is a real problem. It affects real people. It kills people. It maims people. Speed can kill people. There are a lot of engineering changes that can be made. That's also enforcement, which we're talking to Michael Brown, Chief Mike Brown. There's also education.
If you could summarize in the next 30 seconds, please.
There's also education, which perhaps we can help. My point, in summary, is very simple. Urgency, not 2028. To the extent that this commission can help to move this along and implement actions today so that other people don't get hit, so that you don't get hit, so that your family members don't get hit, so you don't have to go to a burial. Please consider taking steps now to help implement near-term and longer-term installation programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Mr. Kilcullen.
Good evening. My name is Peter Kilcullen. I'm a resident of Porto Vecchio and presently chair of their External Affairs Committee, which is the committee that's concerned with events that happen outside of the condominium. Porto Vecchio, of course, is located in this small area right at the south end of Alexandria, and the new Thornton project is going up right across the street. In terms of Vision Zero, which is what I wish to address, there is a serious concern in this area where you have a confluence of pedestrians, bicycles using the Mount Vernon Trail, and cars exiting and entering Porto Vecchio, as well as not too far in the future, cars will be exiting and entering the Thornton. And so this is a highly congested area, particularly on weekends. I wish that this area be considered for closer study as to what kind of controls we might initiate on traffic, cars entering and leaving Porto Vecchio, bicycle controls, and pedestrian controls. Related to that, and slightly, well, just related to it, is the idea also of the, there is a traffic light right now that controls some of the traffic in that area. And with the addition of, what, 500-600 units at the Fortin, I would request that the city undertake a traffic survey to assure that, you know, there's proper entry and exit times in this area. That's also something that will be coming in the future. And I don't know where else to go at the moment, since I'm new on the External Affairs Committee, to request that the city undertake a traffic survey, or at least try to keep us advised on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the speakers that have filled out request forms to speak. Is anyone else in the audience looking to make a statement before the commission? Okay. Thank you, everyone, for those who have requested to speak. We'll be closing out our public comment session at this point. Next item on the agenda would be the minutes of the September 20th meeting. Does anyone have any proposed changes to the minutes?
I do see a small typo at the top of page 2, which should be the Alexandria City Public Schools. Alexandria County, I believe, was the former name of Arlington.
Thank you for that.
And I submitted some changes to staff in advance of the meeting. Did those make it into this version?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Excellent.
So we have the feedback from Councilman Levine, and you have the other changes from... Okay, good. Okay. Do we have a motion to accept the minutes as amended?
I'll make a motion.
Okay. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion passes. The minutes have been accepted. We have five items on the consent agenda. Are there any items that any of the commissioners wish to move to a general discussion item?
Yes. I'm checking my notes.
Take your time.
Which one did I ask to move?
Environmental action plan,
right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to pull up my questions. Okay. So, and I wanted to pull it because this is happening now, and I wanted kind of apropos to my comment to a speaker earlier about the fact that the Environmental Action Plan is being updated, I wanted to give staff a chance to speak to us a little bit about that process, about the public involvement piece, and there are ways that transportation, all of us can name many of them, transportation is involved in the environmental sustainability of Alexandria, and I want to make sure that we as a commission are engaged in that process and are supporting it to the best of our abilities.
Before we begin, are there any other items you'd like to move from consent to general discussion, or are we good with just the one item? Okay. Please proceed.
Well, maybe I'll just let staff field it for a little bit, and then I'll ask follow-up questions if needed.
Sure. So basically, my name is Ramiro Rios, and I will be the liaison between the city staff and the Transportation Commission from now on. And the update on the Environmental Action Plan is underway, as you already know. And this action plan is being updated because it was envisioned that every 5 years the action plan will be updated. And so the original action plan was approved in 2009. It's been 8 years since it was updated, and there's a need to update the action plan. So one of your questions was why does it need to be updated? And obviously there's a lot of indicators and there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed in that action plan, and the update is going to look at what is the progress that we've made since the approval of that action plan. So the Environmental Policy Committee has been meeting to address this update And city staff is basically, from the transportation side, we are providing a lot of inputs and updates to the transportation chapter. So we are working in tandem with the environmental folks to make sure that those chapters reflect a lot of the planning that we've been doing in the last year, couple of years, or in the last year since the EAP was approved. In terms of public engagement, it mainly occurs at the EPC, which is the Environmental Policy Committee, meetings.
There are no other external engagement activities planned?
There are, and I don't know the details of those, you know, when they were scheduled. I know there's going to be one in November, but I can get back to you on that, on the specific dates.
Yeah, I mean, if they've got a summary of their schedule or work plan for it that you can send out to the commission,
so
that would be great.
Sure. One of the issues was that, you know, they just hired a person to update this last August. So, you know, they just started planning all these updates. And one other question that you had was, what was the green inventory, which is mentioned in the write-ups, and that's basically a compendium of environmental policies, programs, and plans that the city has to address environmental issues that span from transportation to energy, green buildings, et cetera, et cetera. And that is also being updated in the new version of the EAP.
Okay, so the green inventory is a crosswalk of other policies and plans that have environmental components?
That's right.
For them?
Okay. Across sectors.
What's staff's plan for engaging the Transportation Commission on this?
There's plenty of time for us to discuss that in the Transportation Commission. Like I said, we haven't received a request for input from the environmental group that is coordinating this update. So as soon as they reach out to us, we will get back to you and propose. You know,
I propose that it be the other way around, okay. that you reach out to the staff point of contact for the EAP update and mention that the Transportation Commission, namely me at least, but probably other commissioners, would like to provide support to them on that update,
okay.
And that we'd like to engage in a productive way that's not like waiting till the very end. So,
but that hasn't started yet. The process to... But yes.
Well, the update, it's been on meeting agendas already. I don't know how engaged the process is, but I'm just saying I don't want it to be like there's a fully fledged draft of a plan that we're then responding to. It would be better to receive some input earlier than that.
Sure.
And with just in general, we can be at our best in supporting that document if our level of engagement and the if there's someone, maybe like we need a Transportation Commission liaison to it. Do we have one? Are you?
Oh, I'm the Environmental Policy Commission liaison, and
great.
I can add some additional detail if that would
okay.
be helpful.
Wonderful.
We just met on Monday, in fact.
Yeah.
And that was our last commission meeting. And we have had it on the agenda a couple times. We still are discussing format, and we're still discussing with city staff what is expected of the commission versus staff. That is still up for debate. The commission has, in 2009, were the main writers of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like that was still a little bit, we weren't entirely sure we were aligned with city staff on who would be the main authors of it. There's 10 chapters in it currently. Transportation is one of them.
The first one.
But that's not how we had a retreat back in September, and we picked five that we thought we might be able to take on and chew on the first year, and then with the idea of doing the other four or five, because we might actually change the formats a little bit for the second year. Transportation
okay.
was not on the first list, but we think there's a lot of reasons that we would like to do something with transportation. So the idea is that we would fully do five chapters, but at least a couple other ones, in transportation being one of them, we think support enough to at least get a start on, because it does intersect with quite a few other chapters.
This is really helpful. So this June 2018 deadline is for the first 4 to 5 chapters,
yes,
out of 10.
Out of 10.
And then there'll be a phase 2,
yes,
which will cover the other,
exactly,
4 to 5. And what's the timing? Did we do simultaneous EAP and the green building?
Yes.
Is that what you're doing?
Yes, we are going to do simultaneously. We're still actually working out the schedule on that as well, because the green building kind of got knocked off of the schedule for a while and then was pushed, Environmental Policy Committee pushed to have it on there, because we can't, mm-hmm, really see how you can move forward with,
right,
the EAP when not considering that, and it's already way past time,
right,
to update that. We do think we'll have a meeting in November. We were throwing around dates on that. There is a November, something the week of Thanksgiving date,
like the 20th, maybe,
that we are waiting for Councilman Chapman to return from a trip, and they have something planned for November 20th. So we were thinking it would be after that date. So likely the first week in December might be a public, our first purpose meeting. But I know that staff was going back to. Sustainability coordinator,
right,
was going to go back to staff and see what dates work and get back to us on that. But we did start to brainstorm just kind of things we like to do. We're considering making it a simpler format.
Mm-hmm.
Like now, we think 70 pages, 80 pages. It's a really long, big document, and we think that there was a long list of activities, and they're in this current, you're doing the Greenventory, that's right. That's actually not quite connected with the EAP. That's like you said, it covers every environmental activity that's,
right,
being happening across all departments, which we think is really great, but it doesn't necessarily connect with what's in the EAP. We've been asking for anything that there is measures or indicators, kind of like a checklist of what was accomplished out of the EAP, and it doesn't seem like that's going to happen, but we think that it would be we're still pushing for that, because we think it would be a great idea to at least know what things, not that we thought everything would be accomplished, but if they're not, then it would help us kind of know how to scale back, because we want to make sure that we're doing the big ticket or things that we can get done and make it a realistic EAP. So instead of just listing 30, 40 things,
right,
we thought we probably would make a shorter document and try to get to the point. That's kind of where we are right now, but I probably could have more for you next time, too.
That was wonderful and
good.
Helpful. And I do want to say that if you guys looked at your workload,
mm-hmm,
the scope of what you could cover, and you selected chapters that don't include the transportation chapter, I'm not here trying to make work for you.
Yeah.
But I would still leave open that,
yes,
if there are interconnections in the other chapters you're working on, even the green building,
yes,
requirements have transportation elements
related
to it.
It absolutely does.
And I think that we bring it back.
I would love that, and I welcome the idea of, and I'm sure the APC would as well, as working on those together in any way we can. And I do think transportation will end up, that was one of the debatable ones. It was that one, and I'm trying to remember the other one that was left off, that we just were like, if we can get something done on that, because of how it intersects with so many other, there's a lot of overlaps.
Yeah.
But we were trying to get a reasonable workload that something, because we just didn't think we could do all 10 at the same time. But
yeah,
there was a lot of debate at the retreat on that, and what really should take on, and should it be a little at once. But we were looking more trying to get the short-term goals at least,
mm-hmm,
on some of, on maybe all of them, and then really do the full chapters on 5 of them.
Yep.
And do you have anything else to add on?
No.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else on this subject? Okay. All right. Next item would be commission updates. I'll start with my left. We'll work around the room this way.
As I mentioned earlier, my one subsidiary with the Zipple Landmark Policy Advisory Group, our next meeting, we haven't had a meeting since, it's been a few months now, but our next one, as I said to the gentleman earlier, is on Monday, October 23rd, from 7 to 9 at 200 Cameron Station Boulevard. So feel free to join us. But I have no other updates.
Thank you. Nothing? Okay. No.
Short one.
Yes.
We, the Commercial Parking Task Force had its 8th meeting yesterday evening. This is 8 out of 9 or 10, maybe. We're closing in on the final laps. Staff, what we focused on yesterday evening were shared parking, exemptions, meeting space in hotels, and there might have been a couple other odds and ends. What else did we get? Yeah, those were the key things. I'll talk about public comment in a second. So basically what we've brought up to this point are a lot of solidity around the ratios we're recommending and the data that backs those up. The issue of shared parking took up a lot of time because it's frankly such a complex thing, both to implement successfully but also to apply to existing development versus new development. So we had a really robust conversation about that. We gave staff some really good feedback. I don't have concrete recommendations to share with you all today, but I think, what did I write down for the dates? We're coming back, staff are coming back to the Transportation Commission in the November meeting, right, with the request for endorsement, essentially. So we had a really robust conversation about this last month, and in November it's going to be the request for us to endorse the full package recommendation. And so that's going to have, hopefully we can get, we might be able to get some of that a little bit early. It'll be tough. I can support that presentation to the extent necessary because it'll be probably back-to-back in terms of the commercial parking working group getting its meeting done right before transportation sees it. But at any rate, we'll be adding in recommendations for shared parking exemptions, how to handle meeting space in hotels, and other odds and ends that come together. I also wanted to mention we did get public comment from a gentleman who wanted to highlight the challenges of users using shared parking. So it's something to think about. We can potentially create a regulation that makes it possible for buildings to check the right boxes when they want to develop and take credit for shared parking opportunities. But this gentleman, Mr. Ray, wanted us to consider how obvious is that going to be for community members, because the shared parking is not in reality providing the resource that it needs to provide if it's impossible to understand where it is, how to get to it. And that's, I think with a lot of things in transportation, that translation from policy to reality is a really important one for us to consider. And we may not be able to have policy or ordinance answer all of those questions, but when staff are helping decision makers approve projects or helping those developers or business owners design their parking solutions using these new policies, those are the things to consider, how to make it easiest and most obvious for community members so that that parking solution is effective. That's my update.
Thank you. Councilman?
No, we had an interesting transportation policy planning board committee, transportation planning board meeting today. We're making this transition from the days of a constrained long-range plan, only looking at projects that are fully funded, to adding an unconstrained portion of a long-range plan that highlights certain projects as high priority, even if they're not yet fully funded. And so, on the constrained piece of our work today, it turned out there was only one comment on the suggested projects, but that one led off into a very vigorous discussion about the Nice Bridge, for those of you who know about it, the 301 crossing. It's currently a two-lane bridge with no shoulders, a four-lane highway going down to a two-lane bridge with no shoulders. And so the original plan was a four-lane replacement span with shoulders and with a barrier-separated pedestrian and bicycle a path, which currently no pedestrians or bicyclists can go across this bridge either. So what it turned out that Maryland is doing a little practical design value engineering and decided to save money, they should forget the pedestrian bicycle lane and narrow the shoulders to 2 feet instead of 8 feet and lower the height of the proposed bridge. Well, that was the one I spoke up on, although I'm very interested in all these subjects, but if they lower the height, we can't bring tall ships into Alexandria anymore. And the Navy ships might have a hard time getting in too. And so so now the Transportation Planning Board will be submitting comments to the Maryland Transportation Authority about these concerns. Apparently lots of these issues are still unsettled, but it's kind of it's quite a ways down there, but it still impacts Alexandria. On the unconstrained side, I talked about to them about a pet project of mine, which is in four of the 10 candidate priorities include improving pedestrian and bicycle access to metro stations. It turns out that two studies, one by WMATA, one by Transportation Planning Board, found that in the majority of metro stations in this region, there are people who live and work within half a mile who cannot get to that metro station without getting in a vehicle, and which is crazy. And so, and my idea is that once we get this plan approved in December, then next year the Transportation Planning Board should sponsor a federal Tiger Grant application for a bundle of these projects to do footpaths or sidewalks to enable people to get to the metro station. And these are less than $1 million a piece, and so it isn't breaking the bank. But the single most cost-effective way, I think, to promote transit-oriented development is to make it easy so you can walk to the metro station if you live within or work within a half a mile. So, and this is if you bundle them, then you have a real regional project. And so I'm getting some real traction on that, and hopefully we'll get that together next year.
Thank you.
Anything for the group?
A little bit. We had the Environmental Policy Commission meeting on Monday, and we did discuss for quite a while the commercial parking standards, so I thought that might be a study, so it might be worth bringing that up and the recommendations. I just wanted to know if there was a date that would be good to, we were going to write a letter to submit, and we were thinking we would go to the task force because we wanted, if we had ideas that could be included or part of the recommendations, then we wanted that to be part of the discussion with the task force. So we didn't know if you're going to be meeting in November 20th, or it would be pushed a little up a little bit.
I think we're moving
would you
it.
Want that by?
Yeah, it's in November 13th.
November 13th.
Monday the 13th.
Okay.
So it would be wonderful if you wanted to get it in by then.
Okay, before the 13th would be probably enough. Okay,
great.
That's good. All right, great. Some of the things that were coming up were discussing. We didn't come to a consensus at the meeting, but it was a lot of discussion on the type of whether or not we wanted to be able to push the envelope a bit and make sure that we like the idea of less parking, of course, and we think it's structurally correct was the general consensus, but we wanted to consider things that might encourage new development to have even less parking and be really consistent and support the Environmental Action Plan. And that might, and we also some other ideas were coming out there, like dynamic parking prices, and that was something that was thrown out there. I thought it was, that we thought that was a really worthwhile. I guess we might have to go, eh?
All right. Well, let's adjourn temporarily to resolve the fire. Just in case.
This is very annoying.
We were recording where the left off. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I was alarmed by the alarm and the lack of a visual indicator, which is part of it.
I think it was Councilman Levine. He's the only one who didn't come back.
Pull the alarm.
Do we have a quorum?
Yes. Okay. We will resume the meeting.
All right.
I think I had my bad there. I'll leave it there.
I was trying to give.
Carolyn, did you finish your?
Almost.
I'm
yeah.
Not sure where you left off. You had any additional information to share with the group?
I'm listening with rapt attention.
Yeah. Sure. I'm trying to think of where I left off. It was we were just talking about the Environmental Policy Commission meeting, and we talked both about the commercial parking recommendations for changing the standards and. And I just want to make sure. I think I pretty much just figured out that it would probably be best just to follow up with, make sure we get the letter to you.
Yeah, so the 13th
okay,
of
great.
November.
And I could probably email you, too, if there's any just questions about like the schedule, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, absolutely.
And then the other thing was that we talked about, we discussed like the dash, whether or not the recommendation to, that they were going to move, proposal to go forward with getting clean diesel fleet instead of going electric and
the hybrid
the hybrid, right? Yes. And so we're going to also write a letter about
that and give our recommendations for that. Okay. We're still really very much would like to keep electrification in their timeline sooner rather than later. And so that's just.
Yeah, that discussion did come up tonight, and as funding is available, becomes available and technology becomes available, electric clearly is an option both from a cost standpoint of the original acquisition, and operating costs are clearly much lower with an electric fleet. However, I don't think the industry is quite there yet. But long range, that is absolutely the goal of the board. We will be finalizing our decision at some point very soon.
Okay.
That was discussed tonight.
Great.
And I understand there's a couple follow-up items. I think Josh, the general manager,
yes.
needs to get back to the commission on there were some questions that
for the UPC. UPC. That's yep. true. Yes. Yep. Great. Okay. That's it.
All right. Great. Thank you. I just have two items in the interest of time. I'll try to be brief. I went to the public hearing and open house yesterday for that DRPT had for the high-speed rail project between Richmond and Washington. And there were a few speakers, most of which were requesting adequate service. Both on during the week and on weekends, there was request to consider electrification, which right now is not in the plan for the project. That does add a very high cost element to the project itself, but there was some feedback on that, along with the availability of parking to accommodate the anticipated ridership, and that was brought up to, at least to this group, to the group of people that were there. And they just did a presentation, and they had some information available on the project overall. But that took place yesterday. This is one of, I think, eight public hearings that they were holding throughout the Commonwealth.
Just a question. Did yes. anything come up with the removal of trees? There was a question that someone asked me about, I believe it was with this project, about a loss of trees along the railway, and they had some concerns, and I didn't know if that's been coming up at the public hearing.
The public hearing, the only item I'll say that was related to the environmental impact study mm-hmm. was the sound produced by the increased rail traffic, and that will be included as part of the study. But as they, and this is not during the public hearing, but through the presentation that they had, the open house session, as they try to realign the current right-of-way, it's highly likely that some trees will be removed in order to reduce curvature to allow a more tangent track alignment that will allow for the higher speeds, and they're targeting speeds of approximately 90 miles an hour as opposed to the 125-plus that are being operated on Amtrak's Northeast Corridor north of Washington, D.C., up through Boston. But they were talking about 90-mile-an-hour speeds. But it's highly likely that some right-of-way green life trees through general shrubs would be impacted by that. Alan?
Add in, if you don't mind. I was also at the meeting last night, and just so everyone's aware, the DRPT, the Department of Rail and Public Transportation, will be presenting an overview of the project to City Council this coming Tuesday on the 24th. So they're going to get a high-level overview of what the project is. The staff has been drafting comments for the EIS. We'll be asking City Council to take action endorsing those comments moving forward. But to get to your point about the trees and some of the other noise impacts, parking and things like that, those have been brought up. The draft EIS has been reviewed by Transit, by Transportation Planning and Zoning, Parks and Recreation, a whole breadth across the city to make sure that all the comments and concerns we have have been documented.
Okay, great.
And with the last meeting, I brought up the pilot program that was implemented by DASH, allowing T.C. Williams students to use their student IDs for bus boardings. And the report that the general manager provided today was that it's a very successful program. Through September, there were, pass counts per day upwards of 700 for the September, that is, and in excess of 900 for the month of October so far. And there have been no reports issues related to the increased students on the buses with respect to either capacity or any type of behavioral issues or adverse impact to passengers, but we're still being mindful of that. But so far it looks like they've been able to offload from traditional bus operations or providing a bus option for students that normally would not have that option by using their student ID. But he's continuing to monitor that. That's all I have for the updates. Next item would be two TNES grant applications. The first would be the TDM operations grant for FY19.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tonight, the Transit Services Division, we have two presentations for you tonight and two requests about two different grant programs that we're advancing. The first one is going to be the TDM program, and the second one is going to be CMAC RSTP. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. But I did want to introduce to you all to Mr. Thomas Hammond. He's our new TDM and TMP coordinator here with the city, and he's joined us back in May. Okay, and he's been a great asset. He's brought a lot of good ideas, a lot of enthusiasm to the program. He's formerly with Coca-Cola Corporation down in Atlanta, ran their TDM, their corporate TDM program. So, welcome, Thomas, and
okay, well, thank you, Alan, and thank you, commissioners, for giving me the opportunity to talk with you a bit about GoAlex. What I am asking for tonight is for your endorsement of our grant application for our foundational grant for this program, our Transportation Demand Management Operations Grant. So first, a quick overview of what GoAlex is. GoAlex is our resource for mobility options in the city. It's how residents, visitors, and workers in Alexandria learn and use their different mobility options. We have a very strong marketing campaign that educates folks not only about various options like Dash, WMATA services, VRE, and others, but also how which of these options best fits their lifestyle and their budget. So in order to educate a person on that, we have three different service lines. We have three different service lines in which we help to educate folks in Alexandria about transportation options. Employer outreach, grassroots marketing, and a mobile store. Employer outreach is something that we strive to touch every single employer within Alexandria and build commuter programs with them. This takes on several different forms with several size employers. Within the past few months, we have been working very closely with the National Science Foundation as they have transitioned into their new space here in Alexandria. We were present at several transportation fairs and have been working very closely with their commuter transportation staff, making sure that each of their 1,600 employees have the knowledge about all of their transportation options they have. We don't just work with big employers though, although obviously they are very important. Just a couple of weeks ago, we were privileged to work with a new business in Alexandria, an indoor playground space that has four employees, and yet we help them build a commuter transportation program. We also have a grassroots marketing program that reaches out to residents and visitors directly. We have a multi-pronged strategy for reaching these individuals, whether it's mailings to new homeowners within the city, educating about transportation options. We have a team that attends several events within the city of Alexandria. You can see a picture of them at the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. They have a display. They gather a lot of attention. They know how to get attention and engage with people. And we get about 100 interactions each time that we are out there. And we were out at an event about 50 times in FY 2017. And then finally, we have a mobile store. And our mobile store is what helps the commuters who are already using their transportation options use them effectively. We operate on a mobile basis so that we can go to wherever the demand is, and we sell to commuters a whole bunch of different fare media, whether it's smart trip cards, VRE passes, easy passes so that they can take advantage of the HOT lanes, and so on and so forth. We are moving the program in new directions. In FY18, we are developing and implementing a series of performance measures to see how it is that we are doing. Certainly, we are going to have some internally. What we're very interested in is seeing how we, whose behavior we've actually changed, who it is that we have actually encouraged to look at their transportation options and realize, you know what, I don't have to drive everywhere to get around Alexandria. I have other choices available to me, and the city makes them available to me. The Department of Rail and Public Transportation, who is our grantor in this case, is also developing a series of performance measures that they would like to see us implement. Those measures will be forthcoming, and we will be working on the best way to gather the data for them in FY 2018. We are working on more geographic equity in how we do our outreach. Certainly, we would like to have all Alexandrians know about their transportation options and actually using them, whether they live in the West End, Delray, Old Town, or a myriad of other neighborhoods. And then finally, we are leveraging our partnerships with DASH and several major employers, especially those who already have commuter transportation programs and those who are part of transportation management plans that we have. As I have mentioned previously, all of this is funded foundationally by a Transportation Demand Management Operations Assistance Grant that we receive from DRPT. The total grant amount is $301,077. The state awards the $240,941.60 that you see at the first sub-bullet. The city has to match $60,235.40. This is what the grant amount that we are using in FY17, and this is also what we are asking for your endorsement to apply for in FY18. There's no change between the 2 years. In addition, that grant provides returns for the city. For just a $60,235.40 commitment, you receive two FTEs, myself and a colleague of mine, who manage the TDM program, manage the Transportation Management Plan program for the city, manage the Transit Employee Benefit program for the city, and also participate in several high-profile events for the city. We organize Bike to Work Day, we organize Car Free Day, and we're also getting involved in more events for the city. We also do a fair amount in support of other multimodal planning efforts, as well as transportation planning efforts as well. So my ask of you tonight is for your endorsement for the TDM Operating Assistance Grant application. Should you endorse this, we will ask City Council on November 28th to provide a 20% funding match for this grant. They will budget $60,235.40, and we will apply for the grant shortly after, once they give us permission. So with that, thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Yes.
I did have a couple questions. In the presentation, you mentioned that GoAlex is working on performance measurement of some kind to see whose people you behave, who, you know, all that changes behavior and everything else. And I'm actually very interested in this. Do you know when these measures will be completed, when these will be developed?
So that's something that we are actively working on right now. There's two buckets for this. There's state performance measures, which we believe will cover higher level topics such as vehicle miles traveled as well as emissions. Those measures, DRPT is in the end stages of refining. We hope to learn more about them soon. And then for internal performance measures, we are working with the Office of Performance Accountability to develop those measures. Again, we will have a focus on how it is that we actually change behavior.
Excellent. And when do you know when you might anticipate the first set of results?
I'm hoping that they would that we can start implementing them within this fiscal year.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The next item we're going to discuss is the RSTP funding for fiscal year 24, but it also lists a chart showing the fiscal year 19 number for TDM at 526,000. Why is that number different from the number you have up here?
The short answer is that those are actually two separate grants. The grant that we will be discussing in the second portion is something that we do manage and we leverage for our transportation program, our TDM program rather, and it also contributes to some of the projects that you see on that in the presentation.
There is kind of a four-pronged total funding package. There's this TDM Ops grant. Each year we also get a VDOT employer outreach grant, which is formula-based. It's roughly $49,000 to $50,000 a year. And you're right, there is federal money involved in this as well that pays for a variety of things. It pays for a lot of the outreach that Thomas talked about, some of the programs. We do have a consulting firm on board who helps us with that, who provides manpower to do all of these 50 events plus a year that we don't have internally. But also there are some other items that are funded in there as well. Thomas mentioned leveraging our coordination with DASH going forward. One of the items that is funded by this is the DASH call center. So if you ever call the 746 DASH number, you're calling that call center. So part of these funds actually pay for that. And we're working with them to kind of transition from a very DASH-focused call center to a more multimodal one. We're getting them involved in coming out to some of the fairs. They were recently at the Patent and Trade Office employee fair not too long ago with us. They've been coming out to some of the other events that are out there. We're trying to help them broaden their horizon of information that they have so they can ask about Capital Bike Share, they can ask about Metro, they can ask about all the other different transportation options that we're promoting out there. So it's a variety of different things from a couple different pots of money covering a multitude of programs. So it's a pretty, I think Thomas framed it really well. For a $60,000 cash investment by the city, we're leveraging a significant amount of money and a significant amount of programs out of that investment.
Yeah, it didn't, until you asked that question, I hadn't been doing the math to compare the grant ask that we're talking about now and all the stuff that you were describing, Thomas. And so I was like, oh yeah, two FTEs, 50 events a year staffed by these people, a mobile store. Yeah, it's more than $300,000.
We don't have the resources to do it internally. Yep. It would be nice if we did it, we don't. But the leveraging of these dollars gives us a great amount of flexibility, whether it comes to staffing of different events that Thomas mentioned, but also some of the creative work that goes into this. A lot of TDM is marketing, and one of the firms we have is helping us out, helped us transition from the old Local Motion program to Go Alex. And Go Alex has been very successful getting it out there and coming up with that brand as something that people can tie with the city. And so a lot of that creative work and some of those areas of very niche expertise has helped this program grow a lot. And so we're leveraging all of these funds to get that done.
Yeah. So I wanted to say that I think, well, most of you know, and Thomas, we've spoken on the phone,
we have.
But we've never met in person. I work in TDM as my day job, and so on the one hand, what I think is really important about these programs is that they make our other investments successful. So we can provide great bus service, but if people still feel there's a stigma around the bus, they don't get on the bus, no matter how great our bus service is. We provide access, great access to a new metro rail station. We work so hard in all these different realms through Planning Commission to approve projects that are suitable around a metro station, through providing transit capital projects improvements. But a lot of how people make decisions is about how they think about their lifestyles and how they think about how the transportation options available to them fit into their lifestyles. So your work is really important, and it's really important in the ways that you described how it connects to the other things that we're doing as a city. I think it is really admirable to see how well you leverage little amount of funding to go a long way with outside funds. And I think every jurisdiction in the Commonwealth that tries to build up a robust TDM program is doing the same kind of thing. It's leveraging as much as you can out of a little bit. I want to caution that staff should continue to make hard sells on actual investment in TDM that comes from Alexandria, because you don't want, it's valuable. And it's like, if you make something free, or if it feels free, we aren't thinking about how we're going to budget for it if the state doesn't want to pay for it anymore. So keep that long picture in mind. And I would say the way you do that is you think about how TDM connects to capital projects, how it connects to service enhancements, and try to figure out how to bundle those resources that you're getting so that you continue to diversify those funding sources and make them sustainable in the long term, even if the state's funding priorities change or the federal government's. I did want to ask, why is there no upward change in the FY19 ask?
The reason we stuck to the flat one, flat budget, is we've been in a period of transition between staff, and honestly, it was pretty straightforward to keep the level flat going forward. It fits with what our needs are. It doesn't just cover the FTEs, it covers all the benefits and the overhead that goes along with it. And there also is other funding in there that covers some of the operational side of things. We have the funding available for professional services and for mailings and for all the kind of administrative office stuff that's in there. Okay. I think this year we think the budget that we have is...
This is your rebuilding year.
It is. We've transitioned from an old project manager to Thomas. We've transitioned from Locomotion to Go Alex. And Thomas and I have had some pretty extensive discussions about where we see this program going forward. One thing that we kind of glossed over, but I don't want to lose sight of, is Thomas is also the TMP coordinator. So all the TMPs that are out there across the city, there are many, many requirements out there, especially as new development comes online, to provide either to the city TMP funds or for those TMPs to spend the money. So we've gone from getting the regulations passed and in place to actually trying to now monetize that and the enforcement side of it, which is one of the big projects that Thomas is working on. So when you talk about diversifying the different types of funds, that's one option. Mm-hmm. The next option is kind of on our radar next is 395 express lanes. There's a consent agenda item about that. TDM is definitely an eligible expense for that. The entire geographically, the city of Alexandria is eligible. So TDM is an eligible expense, capital and operating for DASH, capital and operating for other transportation improvements. So I definitely agree with making sure we try to keep our options, don't put all your eggs in one basket, but we're trying to keep those open. I think we're exploring more and more of those new ideas. So.
And one last minor question, because it caught my eye when you described that you actually are also responsible for administering the Alexandria City Employees Transit Benefit Program?
I am not, but a colleague of mine is.
Yeah, so that's embedded somehow in the TDM team. Mm-hmm. How much, so I don't know if you mind my asking, but how much effort goes into that? I mean, I would have expected something like that to be in like HR or some kind of benefits team that would...
It is a city benefit. It's traditionally been managed in our department. We see it as kind of, it's a benefit that we're trying to get people to use it, first of all, and trying to get people to take transit, but also it's a different audience. We have the external audience was very Go Alex, but we can't forget the how many hundreds of thousands of people that work for the city. It's very important too, so having those two together kind of makes sense. And trying to promote that it's like, yeah, just because you're a city employee doesn't mean GoAlex doesn't matter. It's just another audience. I think there's, in the grand scheme of things, how it comes together, it does provide actually a good opportunity to pull those two things together and educate folks internally.
That's really neat. Have you done any surveys? Do you have a mode split guesstimate for city employees?
I don't think we have done a survey on that recently. I know that... one of the things that Thomas brings this position is he's very data centric, which is what we really, really need for
so
this.
So you're
going to
survey
forward them.
And you'll find out.
That's, I think, a great idea and something I think we should definitely include in our work going forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Thomas or any other discussions before we move this to action? Okay. Do we have a motion to endorse the FY19 TDM grant application as presented?
I'll carry that motion.
Okay. Motion. Second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The next item is the FY24 CMEC RSTP program funding request.
Us again. So this is the second grant that we wanted to talk to you about tonight. Most of you may well know, CMAC RSTP is federal formula funds that are basically allocated on a formula basis. The city is eligible for a certain percentage each year for out of Northern Virginia. So Jim Aslanka is our grants manager, and he's going to run through the presentation, and what we're going to be requesting for you is endorsement of the FY24 program. I think one thing that's important to keep in mind is FY24 funding. There's a lot of thought and work that goes into trying to plan six or more years out, so this is what we think is something is reasonably expected of ways that we will be able to spend the money out in FY24. Okay.
Thank you, Alan. One of the things I think that you folks might want to get a little primer on is basically what CMAC and RSTP are. Those are two subtypes of funding which the federal government confers to all entities, and actually Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality, or CMAQ, and Regional Surface Transportation Programs are provided to the federal government and sub-allocated by the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to the entities in Northern Virginia. And so basically we do this on an annual basis. Maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, what we were doing was to do an application that would be for the next fiscal year, the fiscal year 19. But they decided that it would make a lot more sense to have a six-year plan. And so, as a consequence, all of our things are pushed back to 6 years into the future. So this is a fiscal year 2024 allocation. Just a brief indication of what those two sources are. Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality, or CMAQ, are basically types of programs which help provide cleaner air. Regional Surface Transportation Programs are programs that provide a wealth of regional transportation functions, including shelters, non-motorized vehicle, lots of things of that nature. So So they're both quite flexible. We can do a lot of things with them, but there are a few restrictions. Let me see how we. Let's see here. Okay, sorry. Okay. When we were doing these, we've been doing this for many, many years now, and we're finding that the total amount that we get is somewhere between 4 and 5 million generally. The total amount of CMAQ, $2.1 to $2.8 million. The total amount of RSTP from $1 to $1.5 million. And so the ask that we're asking for this year is quite similar to what we've asked for in previous years. One of the important things also that is sort of as an aside to the discussion that you guys had previously about this is that these are funds which basically the state is providing. These are 80% federal funds, but the local funds are provided for the state. So these funds, $4.5 million, if we get this, is actually just provided to the city without the city having to provide a local contribution, which is really a nice thing to look at. In terms of the timeline, what we are here about is to hear your concerns and what your impressions are for our application. Very much akin to what Thomas was talking about, our program will go before the City Council for its approval on November 28th. On December 15th, we have to do our actual formal application to the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority, either then or a little bit before then. In the spring, basically the NVTA will come up with its justification and recommendation. And then the Commonwealth Transportation Board, or the CTB, will come up with a 6-year plan in June, which formalizes the applications. Now this is the application that we're requesting. In the packet that you have are basically descriptions of each of these programs. They're all fairly close to things that we submitted last year. But if you have any questions, please feel free to give me a question, and I can answer whatever you wish. So one of the things that we are about here is basically asking you folks to endorse this fiscal year 24 CMAQ and RSTP funding request, and recommend to the City Council that they consider and approve the funding request at their November 28th legislative session. So, any questions? Yes, sir.
I want to try and explain this in my own words and ask if you agree.
Okay.
I'm looking at this attachment here. And all of these figures are in the future. None of these numbers have actually been granted yet because they're future funding.
Correct.
But what you've done here, what the program has done, is to increase the predictability and stability of what's going to happen, because any one of the interests in the first column can look at the entire chart and see pretty much where they stand, at least in terms of likelihood, over a 6-year period rather than a 1-year period.
Exactly.
Is that right?
That's precisely the case, and that's the argument that the state made to develop a 6-year plan rather than a single-year plan. And that's exactly one of the reasons why they're doing it, precisely.
And so the fact, for example, that you're dropping to zero parking technology and increasing backlink run from zero, it's not a short-term decision about that. It's a decision that you project is reasonable to implement 6 years down the road.
Exactly. Yeah, that actually one of the, in terms of backlink run, for instance, that's a very expensive. There, we have actually some funds that we want to invest now and in the next couple of years, but then we have a very expensive phase that we have to look at, and so the next phase of backhoe run will start in 2024. So we're talking about the two phases of the project, basically. But it's all scoped out there.
Well, based on all of that, I think I commend you, and I think it's very important that we see the whole spread for the mm-hmm. entire period. And it looks good, sure looks good to me, the way it's spread out.
Thank you.
Although there's some at the bottom that don't seem to be getting anywhere.
Yeah, there's a couple of the ones at the bottom, like the Van Dorn facility. There's money like in 19 and 20, but those are ones that we have a pretty reasonable amount. That's a capital project, and we really don't think we're going to need any more. So that's why I think over the years you'll start to see things fall off and potentially new things get added. So it is meant to be a living document as it goes along. And the numbers themselves, until we get much closer to the actual fiscal year, aren't 100% set in stone. We get estimates from the state of what they think is reasonably expected to be available. We've been generally kind of growing over the last 3 years, growing it a little bit more. We've been lucky so far to get what we've asked for. I think we've been pretty strategic about it, of not over asking, because there are some jurisdictions have thrown their whole CIP into there to see what they can get, and we've been a little more strategic about slowly growing it up and letting it kind of increase, and we've been generally getting what we've been asking for. So that's the reason it's gone up a little bit. And there is, over time, there is flexibility. I think the state understands, and I think the general policy of these types of funds is, this is what we reasonably expect 6 years out, but it is subject to change. I mean, there are times where if a project gets delayed or deferred for some reason, a policy decision is changed at the city level, we don't need those funds, we can shift those funds into other projects. So it's not set in stone forever that it must stay this way. That's why sometimes you'll see declines over time in some projects, you'll see increases at certain times, but there is, in the future, the ability for us to have flexibility to level things out as we get closer. We don't know exactly what we're gonna need for the TDM program, let's say in 2024. So we have time to work out through that and kind of to stabilize it over time.
So to follow on to some of those comments then about the flexibility, can mm-hmm. you describe, for instance, in what we have in the FY19 column, which is our upcoming budget mm-hmm. year, mm-hmm. are these the numbers that have been that way forever, or have these been adjusted to reflect what staff knows because it's imminent? Is the what we likely need to actually do, and what's the process for communicating that to the CMAQ and RSTP source to say, hey, well, actually, instead of $500,000 for TDM in FY19, we want $526,000. Mm-hmm. Like, how does that work?
So the earlier the years are, the more accurate the number is. Mm-hmm. It has happened in the past that the state will, or through NVTA, will let us know, oh, we need to put your numbers back. Some actually, a couple years back, they actually gave us more money. Mm-hmm. So that adjustment process is kind of an ongoing thing. Because
how do we get that to happen more often?
Unfortunately,
I would like that. That would be great. If it happened more often. But yeah,
figure that out. We
yeah, really.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. But for the flexibility part, so that's why early up the first couple years, there's a more of a down the weeds number as opposed to more even numbers in the out years. So
$79.
As they get their numbers in, I mean, what they're projecting now for 6 years out may change next year if the economy changes, if all the different funding at the federal level changes. So there's a lot of things that are in flux out there. Now, if we do want to change funding in the immediate years, let's say your example, FY19, there is a process that we have to go through. To request that to be changed. The NVTA that Jim mentioned, the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority, is the one who manages these funds on behalf of the state, basically. Mm-hmm. And so we worked with them to basically submit a request and a justification of why we're changing things around, and then justifying that we're using the funds in the correct way, that what you're moving it from one pot to another is an eligible expense from where you're moving it from. Mm-hmm. There is a process that goes through there. It has to go through the MVTA, then eventually get adopted, and then eventually gets approved.
Does it have to have been on a list in advance of things that you can move the money to?
Well, you can create a new project, or you can work within this. It's preferred that we keep it within this, because we've told the state and other, this is what we reasonably expect. Mm-hmm. They understand new things come up, but generally the rules, we try to keep it within the program that we have there today.
One of the other things that's important to know is that basically this bottom line number is something that is held. So that's we can juggle around projects within there, but we can't get more money, exactly.
Okay.
But we can juggle around to look at the new
interests.
I think Jim made a good point earlier. The local match being provided by the state is major. I mean, if we have come up with so much more money to access these funds, I think we're one of the few states in the country that does that. So it's a nice benefit that the state pays for us. I mean, they basically take 20% of the total number, and that's money we don't have to come up with
right.
out of the 20%
of the federal commitment to Virginia. Right. Yeah.
And unlike Thomas, who hasn't been here that long, I've been here almost 15 years, and I can remember my first couple of years where the CMAC had to be locally provided, and mm-hmm. the state provided RSTP background. So that was a great, when that happened, it was like everybody was like, hallelujah, it finally happened. So.
I have a couple, I guess, line item questions, and this is just for me to gain familiarity with these things.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the Braddock Road multimodal connections and how, like the Van Dorn improvements, it zeroes throughout the horizon? Was there money in this before? And it's just not now? Is
yes.
there money anticipated later, but just not now?
That's
now
the,
being these 6 years?
Right. The Braddock Road multimodal connections, that project is an FY18 project. Originally, I think there's $500,000 sitting there. The scope of that project is actually looking at how can we improve access to the Braddock Road Metro Station. It's kind of Councilman Levain's, one of his projects about getting better access to our metro stations.
Mm-hmm.
We have that money sitting there. We haven't advanced it yet, but working on trying to figure out the scope of what that's going to be. We're also exploring another option to actually have the study done with WMATA, leveraging some other planning funds that WMATA has, and which may or may not be able to free some of that up. So we're trying to figure out how to squeeze as much out of the money as we can. But
okay.
It is a project that we're hoping to move forward with.
Okay, and when you get that, so FY18 is now.
Correct.
And so that money is sort of in our hands. Let's say you don't execute that project in full, or even let's say you don't even get started
mm-hmm.
until FY19. Do we just keep the money and get
yes.
to hold on
yes.
to it
yes.
until they
yes.
come to us 10 years later
yes.
and be like,
yes.
why didn't
yes.
you spend the money?
Yes.
Is that how it works?
Yes. But yeah, these are basically formula funds. Since they are formula funds, they're
so
ours.
They don't take them back?
No. I mean, if we sit on for 20 years, it might have a story.
Yeah.
But we'll be on
okay.
The fire list long before that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the general thing is that there are our dollars to spend.
Okay.
Sometimes delays happen. You don't spend in the immediate year, but we do hold on to those dollars.
So something that gives me context. When I see FY19 and a zero at Braddock Road or Van Dorn or whatever,
mm-hmm.
the things, the behind the scenes is that there may actually be more money than what is shown here
exactly.
in our pockets
oh, yeah.
to use on these
yes,
things because
right,
we wouldn't
right.
have spent it all in
exactly.
the past.
Or, exactly.
Okay.
Maybe that's, I think, maybe next year we can either include some prior year money just to give you, like, and because there is a little bit of a history back, maybe that's something we can do just kind of to show where we've come now, where what we're doing with the now, and then the forward as well. It gives a little
yeah.
more of a broad context. I think we can do that.
Great. And I guess, so related to that question then,
mm-hmm.
is to carry it on to the line item that is, because we've heard, we'll be talking in a moment about Vision Zero, and we've heard
mm-hmm.
some speakers
mm-hmm.
tonight on that topic. There's a line for pedestrian and safety mobility enhancements on primary
mm-hmm.
corridors.
Yes.
Was there money in the past for that I'm not able to see here? And if not, what's the thinking about the FY23 entry of $1 million bucks versus like the years in between?
That one is a new project. It was a new project last year. Mm-hmm. So FY23 was the first year that dollars were programmed for that project. Okay. That's why there's zeros all the way up to that. So $1 million for 23, new project last year, we're adding $1 million on going forward.
And so going forward in that same vein of like, if you want to make adjustments, if city council's priorities change, you could move money within a year in a request to these entities in order to move investment, essentially sort of front load investment on that project or something, anything like that.
Yeah, one of the important things about moving the dollars though is that if you have to look at the color of money, whether it's CMAQ or RSTP. Mm-hmm. If it's CMAQ, there has to be an air quality improvement mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. So Vision Zero probably couldn't be used CMAQ dollars, but it could definitely use RSDP dollars. Right.
So there's a pot of money for the year, which is then subdivided right. into the two right. categories here, yep. and then each one
so
has
So we
their
can't
rules.
See the color of the money in this chart, but no. you have that
yeah,
in
yeah,
another way.
Right.
But you do have constraints on where you can move.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. CMAQ to CMAQ, RSP, RSP, RSP. You can't move them between
right.
the two.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And so what? This will be my final question. Sorry, I'm just like full of questions tonight. I know that in Planning Commission, we look at a long-range work program. We hear from staff. We hear from other stakeholders about priorities, and we talk about moving things up forward and backward in the timeline. How does that work for you here? Because I know we're being asked today to endorse this, and it's a package, and we don't get any background on why you've put certain things in one year and certain things in another year. And maybe that background has come in the past, and I know that we have that sort of now biannual process for looking at the big picture of our capital improvements and whatnot. How do you work with us on changes that you would want to see or as priorities change, explaining what makes your priorities what they are in given mm-hmm. years going forward?
So two things. One, and depending on where you are in the CIP, moving years like this with this money, we can't do that.
Right, it's not literally that. It's this.
Yeah, it's this.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to move this, you've got to take something from somewhere else because mm-hmm. that bottom line number is
right.
not going to change, and then the two sub numbers will not change.
Right.
So you're working within that at all times.
Yep.
The flexibility of moving things around, I explained the process as policy changes. I think that's something that I think is a good discussion that's, I think it's been had in the past with some of these programs. A lot of them are ones that have been developed for a long time ago, and some of them are continuing forward, and some of them are going to fall off over time as well. And some of them are every couple of years, like the commuter outreach one. When I talked earlier about the Dash call center, how we fund that. That's yep. using that pot of money. It's set up every couple of years. Instead of having mm-hmm. a small pot of money every single year, you do one bigger chunk and spend it over 3 years.
Okay.
It makes it a little bit easier to manage on our side yep. to have one grant that lasts a while instead of multiple grants overlapping.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So that's kind of one of the strategies with that. But, I mean, if there are, as things go forward and as each different project comes to the Transportation Commission through Planning Commission and other ones where there is capital money is being looked for, I think that does open up the conversation of where those funds might come from. But, I mean, these are the numbers that are here that are they're based on needs that we've talked with people across the city of what they are. One of the city's top priorities is advancing the West End Transway, which is why we put operations money in there. But also, I think we're pretty strategic about making sure it's multimodal. We've got transit, we've got TDM, we've got bike share, we've got ITS technology, we've got trails. So I think that's the other part, too. Instead of it all going to one, it's a pretty diverse thing that I think it meets up with what a lot of the goals of the city are, is a multimodal transportation system that we're trying to achieve in the city. And I think this is a way that we can really spread those limited federal dollars across the city.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions of Jim on this item before we move forward? Okay. Any other discussion in the group? All right, so we have a motion to accept the FY24 CMAQ RSTP program funding document as presented.
So moved.
Have a motion. Second?
I'll second.
Second. Okay. All in favor of adopting?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next item is an update by staff on the Vision Zero program.
All right, well, thank you very much. this was essentially the information that would normally be a consent item, but because of the high interest in Vision Zero by the commission, I thought it would be better to just pull it out and make it its own agenda item. So there's no action or motion here to approve. But just real quick, we have basically set the timeline going forward, especially as far as public outreach and the next steps. So we just kind of wanted to give you an update on what we're doing here. So as far as the Transportation Commission is involved, October, which is now, I guess, we're working with the Vision Zero Subcommittee of the Transportation Commission, which is on which Commissioner McMahon and Commissioner Michaelis sit to review the draft strategies before we put it out for public comment. And then we're giving this project update right now. In November, we will come again to the Transportation Commission to review the draft action plan and also hold a public hearing. And then in December, we will seek an endorsement of the Vision Zero action plan. So again, the strategies, we talked about this last time as well, but just to recap, the strategies are to focus on four main areas: engineering, education, enforcement, administrative and policy, and evaluation as well. And then the timeline to include things in addition to the Transportation Commission. We're next Tuesday, we're giving an update to City Council. We'll have a public comment period once the draft is internally reviewed and the Transportation Commission subcommittee can review it and make comments to it. That'll be about 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, and then again we'll present the draft for endorsement at for comment at the November meeting and then the December meeting, and then we'll present the final plan for council approval in December as well. So that concludes this section.
Yeah, thank you. Any questions for Chris on the Vision Zero program?
I don't think I have any questions. I wanted to say staff has received at least a first full set of comments from both Chris and I. Not to say more won't come along, but I tried to be thorough in my first round. I just want to make sure that I know that on my calendar, the Transportation Commission meeting in December is early, right?
Right. That's
that's one of the items we need to finalize.
Later.
But let's assume that.
We're assuming.
Yeah, because that's how it fits before City Council in that time frame. Okay. And so in preparation for the November discussion of the draft and public comment and hearing, when is the draft actually going to be available for review prior to that meeting?
By the subcommittee or by the public?
No, by the public and the transport, because it's coming to the Transportation Commission, and normally we get our the dockets are posted like the Friday before. Roughly that, right?
Yeah,
the Friday before
yeah.
our meeting that happens on a Wednesday. It might be nice to have more time than that.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I'm just wondering if we had an estimated date for when the actual draft
It will be, we're estimating probably the first full week of November. So the Transportation Commission meeting is a little early next month. It's on the 15th. And so it should be that week before possibly even the week of Halloween, but I don't want to make any promises.
Yeah, getting it earlier would be a help.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah, but so it's a substantive document. We'd like to have a chance to have an opportunity to review.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. The a lot of it depends on people getting comments to us and then how quickly the consultants can turn around.
Yeah, so the 1st of November would be 2 full weeks before our meeting. Mm-hmm. So if you could really aim for that, that would be great. Yeah.
Well, we Hillary Orr is now the project manager, and she's known for her sticking to it. So. Great.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the vice chair position. It's a vacancy. We'll entertain nominations tonight for a position of vice chair that will last, if I remember correctly, through the end of this calendar year, because in January we will have normal elections for both positions.
Right. Actually, per the bylaws, they're supposed to the elections are supposed to occur in December, so that.
December for January.
Yeah,
okay.
January.
So basically, we'll be looking for someone for the really the November and December meeting, and then we'll move forward with.
If the commission decides that.
Take action.
Yeah, to take action to elect a vice chair.
So do we have any nominations? And feel free to nominate yourself should you so desire for the position of vice chair.
I'd like to nominate Melissa.
Thanks, Dave. I'll accept the nomination.
I was going to say. Thank you.
I'll accept it. Okay.
Do we have any other nominations? All right. Having heard silence. All in favor of Melissa assuming the role of vice chair? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Congratulations. Use your power wisely.
You have the gavel. Mm.
But to clarify, it is acting vice chair.
Diversity. Thanks for looking out for the good of the order.
Thank you. All right. And the final item that we need to discuss would be just making sure that the early date in December that was sent out by the staff to the commissioners of December 6th is satisfactory with everyone's schedule. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone that has a problem with having it moved to the 6th? Okay.
What day of the week is that?
It's a
Wednesday.
That should be a Wednesday. Yeah. It's just earlier in the month from the 20th, I think it was.
Yeah.
So that'll fall between hearings if we have to or.
Okay. So we'll go with the 6th then.
Great.
Okay, thank you. Any other items before we close out business for this evening? No? Do you have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn to the first pitch in the Cubs
game. And we have a second?
I'll second.
So be it. Thank you, everyone.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Discussion is important.
But I just didn't know there are things like.
Because if we don't have a robust discussion, we're not doing our job.
This year gets some funding next year, but then it never again. But it might be that it's getting this will last for a while, or this may. So I didn't know if there were like ways, or do we ever walk through?
Generally not. These ones were approved late by city council
years ago.
So we're always just building, and that's why the action is just for the one.
This is why this one is like so
It became a new project.